Today, we're unlocking this surprising truth. Leaders who rest well don't fall behind. They actually make sharper decisions, build stronger teams, and drive more sustainable growth. Guys, welcome back to the Innovation Room. I'm Tori here with my co-host, Rhiannon, and we are in the second part of our two-part episode talking all about how do we rest well in a grind-focused culture. If you didn't catch part one, be sure to go back and give that one a listen. So, Tori, we were just talking about sleep and how important it is. And for some, the inability to rest doesn't have to do with time. It's really the identity. And this is one of those downfalls to the grind-focused culture. People, particularly perfectionists, tend to associate their worth and identity with the productivity, something psychologists call toxic productivity. Toxic productivity is defined by compulsion to work, achieve, and produce even to the point of physical and emotional exhaustion. However, this shouldn't be confused with people who have a healthy relationship between work and identity. So we're going to dig deep in this one, and we'll take a look at some of the internal narratives that drive toxic productivity.
Oof.
All right, Scott, here we go.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I know. So how would you identify the difference between toxic productivity and healthy ambition?
I would say toxic productivity is a constant thriving to please others and prove your worth, right? It's a constant, I've got to prove myself. I used to do it. I was a people pleaser through and through. And it's like, I've got to prove myself. I've got to show the youngest of four, I've got to hustle more, right? It's just that was the way it was. I think healthy ambition is knowing the impact that you can have on others. Right, you know yourself. You've taken time to really understand yourself, your abilities. You know that you can push yourself to a certain level in certain areas more than other people can. Whatever that is, right? Your intellects and you think differently, like I do, or whatever. You know what those superpowers, so to speak, are, and you know you can impact other people, and you know how to do it. And so you become very ambitious in doing that because you get fulfillment out of it, right? When we positively impact others and we get to see the impact, what does that do for our soul? We're like, this is awesome, right? I just saw, I walked into the sign shop and they were having problems lighting this. So I used these LEDs I represent and I was able to help them light it properly from all the experience I had in the sign industry, working with their people because they were smart too, but combining our heads and figuring it out, and they were so happy to be able to do that and walk out of there and go, yeah, all right, yep. Yeah, all right. You know, you kind of get that confidence and it builds up to the point because it's rooted in who you are and how you were designed, not what's expected of you and how you perform. And I think that's a critical thing.
And I think healthy ambition is knowing that in different seasons of your life to continue growing and to continue being that best version of yourself. Like for me, when I was young, obviously sales was not only fun and exciting and like, it was, you know, obviously that growth and learning how to have those relationships and communication with people and everything. And now I look at it and that sales aspect isn't as important to me as growing my team and mentoring my team and pouring it to them. And I think as we go through life, we have to constantly evolve and relook at where am I at now? And like you said, what impact am I having best on those around me? And at the time, yeah, the grind of the sales process, I was having an impact on my team or on my company, everything along those lines. But I've evolved and things have changed and now I can have a different impact. So I think that's a really good tip.
No, that's excellent. And I think I would add to that, just make sure that you don't start taking your identity from that. That's hard because it can be addictive, right? It's like anything else. It can be addictive. You're like, oh, I'm making all this impact on these people. This is fantastic. That's where people pleasing comes. Then you become a people pleaser because you're making an impact on them, but your identity is now rooted in that impact. So the key is not to let your identity be rooted in anyone else or anything that you do for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got to be who you are.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, right, because I'm definitely in the perfectionist. I would like to say I'm a recovering perfectionist, but that might not be true.
You're a ballet dancer, Tori.
I know, right?
It's in your blood.
Right. It's so true. It's so true. And I've talked about this on other podcasts and panels and things, you know, growing up in front of the mirror, right? You're staring at yourself all the time. And that is a petri dish for
perfectionism and just constant self-criticism. And so when I screw up something at work, like I make it worse, so much worse for myself than like my boss or anyone could ever. Like I'm more, you know, I'm the most upset about. I think that what I would add to the identity piece of that is that I believe that people have inherent value no matter, and this comes from my belief system that the three of us share, but you know, for our listeners, whatever your belief system is, it's important to know that you're just valuable, whether or not you can produce, right? Because I would argue that people who some would say maybe are a burden on society, right? Folks who have severe disabilities, who can't do anything for themselves, are valuable and do bring beauty and light and joy to the world, right? Even though they can't produce anything. And so I just encourage people to think about that. And when you view others through that lens, I think it really opens up the world to a lot more, and you can empathize more. You can demonstrate more compassion and kindness when you just see people as inherently valuable just because they are.
That's beautiful. And it's very well said. And I could not agree with you more. As a matter of fact, if we all produce something every day, we produce either joy in people or anger. So how do we produce it? Well, we produce it by how we act and how we react. So we can either, there was this older woman the other day, stopped in the grocery store for my wife, grabbing something, and she's standing in line, and she looks back at me. She just tells she's just struggling. And I smiled and I said, "How are you today?" She goes, "I'm fine." I said, "How are you really today?" And she was like, "Well, I'm struggling," and blah, blah, blah. I said, "You know what? I hope it doesn't offend you. Can I pray for you?" She said, "Yes." I was never like that before, but I realized my value is how much I love on others, right? That's a reflection of my value, I should say. It's not my value, that's my reflection. It's how I reflect it. There was a guy, I remember, used to work in a road crew back home, and there's two seasons in Ohio, okay? There's two seasons. There's winter and barrels. That's it. There's always construction, always. So I'm driving through. You guys are up in North, and you know what I'm talking about. So, oh my gosh, you guys you're our cousins. We get it. You're just as bad. So we're driving along, coming back from a job site, and we had to go past, because it was a big job site, three or four times, right? It was a big install. And every day we went by there for 3 days solid. This guy was out there working on the, you know, out in front of the RO crew, out in front of the paver, and he was just shoveling the stuff in front of it and stuff. And he'd look up, and as he saw us go by, he'd go, every time. That was his thing. And we all just would giggle the first time. Second time he did it. Third time I did it back to him. And he yells at, "God bless." And I'm like, "Well, wait a minute. This guy gets it. He has shoveling, but his worth is how he makes other people feel. But don't do it at the expense of compromising who you are. Do it through who you are." And it was one of those little things that when you get older and you contemplate things, you go, "Wow, that was interesting."
That's profound, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, something so small, but that made a huge impact to the point where you remembered it. And,
oh yeah,
you know, that's...
Oh, yeah, 30-some years later. Well, 22 years later.
Yeah, no, I love that. So let's talk from a practical standpoint. How can people to kind of detach their self-worth from the need to constantly produce? Like, are there practical things you can do?
There's lots of them. I want to do this in retirement, but I would suggest for go off the grid, completely away from government and everything else, and you will be so peaceful so relaxed.
100%.
It'll be ridiculous. Now, all joking aside, I think, again, we've been programmed to perform,
mm-hmm.
right? In order to get away from it, we have to cut off the sources of the programming. And right now, the biggest programming is that screen in front of us.
Mm.
That's our biggest programmer, right?
Mm.
Is that. The other thing is consuming things in the echo chamber that has no opposition whatsoever, because you start to believe whatever you consume, right?
Yep.
So I find people that get burnt out, or they're struggling, or they're having a hard time with all this, or they're not performing well at work anymore. They are the first ones that the minute they walk in the morning around the coffee maker or whatever, they're saying, "Hey, did you see that program about blah, blah, blah?" And you're like, "No, I was busy hugging on my wife and hanging out with her. Nope, I didn't see it." if you can't say that and you go, no, I saw it, and you're feeding into it, it's one thing to be aware of things. It's another thing to let them dominate your headspace.
Mm.
So clearing the headspace, going, like you said, going out in the woods, or for you, it might be putting on music and dancing with your husband.
Yep.
I don't know if you're married.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Okay. So dancing with your husband, right? I took a shot there. I took a shot.
Yes.
So you, but you know, putting on the music, dancing with your husband or whatever while you're making dinner, just those little moments that let you breathe, let your soul breathe, I think is key. But making space for that is so hard. Great book written a long time ago, 4-Hour Work Week. Get it, read it. It talks about making space. That's one of the things it talks about, right? So it talks about a lot of things, but you don't have to work as hard if you're ultra focused. I'm big on this. I've been doing this for about a year now, really honing my focus, and I'm amazed at what I can get done in a shorter time frame, and I'm no longer working 12, 15-hour days. And I'm starting to find, not balance, because balance is a joke. Mm. Let's just be honest. There's no set.
People say that, but
yeah. Harmony.
You
can find harmony. That's the key, right? So it's just like a good music. You can find harmony, and sometimes you're down into the beat with the drums, and sometimes it's the piano. But there's harmony that flows between it all, and it makes music together. So your work and your home and your kids, I mean, people go, well, I don't know what my impact is, or I don't, and I work with a lot of companies and people outside of it, and they go, I don't know what my impact is. And I go, do you have kids? And they go, yeah. I said, there it is. I said, I don't know why we're so worried about everyone else or we're not even influencing our own household. And the men especially have been lied to and said, your worth is out there. Our worth is in here. Okay. And not the guilt that you see on, and don't take this the wrong way, not the guilt that you see on Hallmark films and all the other stuff that makes the guy look like a total yutz because he wants a career I'm talking about. And then I love when they put them in those situations where, well, you have to choose between your career and your family. Oh, come on. You know, back to the balance thing doesn't exist. That's ridiculous. But you can choose to have harmony within it. So being self-employed, I've figured out that there's certain times that my clients don't need me that often. And there's certain activities I can do in the evenings better than I can during the day. And in the evening time, things are wound down and I'm still good to go because I'm the second half kind of guy. I mean, I could work 10 to 2 all day long, every day, no problem, because I love to stay up late. So it's not a big deal. So again, knowing yourself, find that balance. You know, well, if I'm in a job where my clients need me from 9 to 3, and I know it kind of dries up after 3, then I work ultra focused from 9 to 3. And then I work on being with my family. And then when they get tired, I catch up on those emails that weren't that important. I do those things. But set a timer for maybe an hour and a half, you know, don't burn yourself out. And then take that hour at the end of the night, not scrolling in the bathroom, sitting down and actually having a discussion with your husband. Actually saying, you know what, we were busy all day. Can I share with you something I went through? And them go, yeah. And then they listen and you go, Dow, what was something you went through today? What was something you were grateful for? So it's those little micro things that feed the soul that keep you from getting to that point and puts up the healthy barriers that we all talk about, but no one ever does.
Right.
Right? No one ever does it because they're afraid to do it.
I mean, yeah. It's being intentional in how you go about your day. And sometimes, again, we get so stuck on the daily grind of, hey, everything we got to do. And then by the time the end of the day comes around, it's like, what did I get done? Honestly, because yeah, you're doing 5,000 things at once and your brain is constantly, they say, I've shared this before too, but where men's brains are like straight railroad tracks and women's brains are like all over the place. And yeah. We talked about
spaghetti,
spaghetti. Yes.
Yeah, it's spaghetti. Literally half the time, all I need to do is just kind of reach in when she lets me and I grab a hold of one string of spaghetti and I just try to straighten it out for her.
Yeah,
there we go. There you go. You're good. Right. You're on track now.
But you look at some of the other countries around the world and yes, America was founded on, you know, being one of the best countries and in the grind and the freedom and what we can do. But have we taken that so far that we can't get back to the reality of what truly is important and what truly is valuable to us? And you look at other countries and maternity leave is valuable. You know, some other have a year maternity leave, paternal leave. Then you have others that have literally their siesta during the day. Everything holds them down at work. It's siesta time. They enjoy an hour and a half lunch with their coworkers while they sip on a glass of wine here and there. They are enjoying life and what was given to us before we're 80 years old and we barely can move. And now it's time to enjoy life. You know what I mean? Like, we're letting it pass us by.
You know, you've made the statement several times about us being founded on grind. I don't think we were. I don't think we were. I really don't. I really do not. I think we were founded on innovation and the drive to invent and create and use our hands and come up with new things and ways to serve people and ways to profit from serving people. Of course, that's a natural part of it. I think the grind was created for the people that work in the factories. Because if we can keep them grinding long enough, we make more money. We haven't even been in capitalism. This is another rabbit hole. Let's be careful. But we haven't even been in capitalism since probably the 1960s. We've been in corporatism. So corporatism is when big corporations and the government get together and go, we know better. Because we're smart, we know better. And we have the resources. And we're going to dictate to everyone else. It's an oligarchy without it being an oligarchy. We've been in that a long time. That's where the grind was born. Because think about 50s and 60s, still pretty darn good. So my dad remembers in the 70s, early 70s, during the gas crisis, watching a tanker pull up to a empty gas station and dump his tanks in it to create the crisis. So I know this sounds kind of conspiratorial, but if you really think about it, when you had these experiences and you know people had them that you trust and you validated those experiences, there's always going to be a thirst for humans to dominate other humans. It sucks. I hate it. I call it out every chance I get. But it's just part of the fall of the human nature of that, right? That's just part of it. It's our jobs to rise above it and to shine a light by how we treat one another and by how we go to market. So you can go to market in such a way it's truly serving that end user that you serve, that they actually want to know more about you as a person and you as a family man and you as how do you do it. And now you have an opportunity to help somebody else get some harmony in their life. And I think that's what's missing is we're so busy with the grind and going and going and going. But I would push back and say that grind wasn't born until about the 60s. I think ingenuity and innovation and all those things drove people. And there were some hard workers. And you hear the stories of, you know, I worked till midnight. I worked 3 days in a row. I get it. But that was driven out of ambition, not the grind. That was driven out of a calling to create something bigger than themselves, not the grind. The grind came in after that, and then it became adopted, and it became propaganda that we all bought into, and then we all said, well, we have to grind, or we're going to fall behind the Joneses. Remember keeping up with the Joneses? We're going to fall behind. We're going to fall behind. We do that in business all the time. Everyone's so worried about their competition. Be aware of it, but don't worry about it, because when you base what you do off your competition, that means you have no vision for where you're going. And now you're reactive to the market. You're not leading the market. And there's a big difference, right? And I think we have a lot of that going on.
So we've been digging into the topic of rest, and we're going to roll into our kind of final section here, right? And what does rest look like for people that really struggle with perfectionism, right? And how do we rest well in an effort to support how we understand our own identities? Now we want to talk about rest as a leadership skill. How do we apply it to our strategic business moves, right? And rest is important for people at all levels of an organization, right? And often leaders in an organization, they're dealing with some of the highest levels of stress, right? They're juggling decision-making. They're trying to constantly communicate. They've got some really high stakes responsibilities and also the emotional weight of, you know, guiding an entire team or an entire organization. It's no big deal. So this, I think, leads a lot of leaders to kind of unintentionally model fatigue as the norm in their company. And research shows that the opposite is actually far more effective, right? Leaders who intentionally build that restorative time into their rhythms actually make better decisions. They communicate more clearly, and they're also rated higher, significantly higher in strategic thinking by their teams. So we know that rest isn't just about personal wellness, but it's also a strategic driver that can really shape your organization's entire culture. And I think when leaders kind of normalize those boundaries, right, they model sustainable work patterns, they give themselves grace, it creates that psychological safety for their team to do the same thing, right? You got to practice what you preach is basically what we're talking about here. So Scott, I'm curious, what do you think that it looks like for a leader to model rest in a healthy way, especially in industries like facility? We talk a lot about facility maintenance on this podcast, but also the signage industry, right? Where you've got deadlines, you've got people who are banging down your door. I know, Rhiannon, you call yourselves the chaos coordinators because it's like, who's screaming the loudest? Who's got the biggest fire today that we need to put out, right? So how do you model rest in a healthy way when it seems like you can't get any downtime?
You know, man, this is one that's really for my heart. I've been going down this path myself, and I've really reinvented CORE as a whole and where we're going. And it really started with asking some, like I said, I came up with this process probably about 15 years ago. It became very solidified. 20 years ago, I kind of went on a journey to figure out there's got to be a better way to do things, right? And it always starts off with three questions in every decision I make. Okay, someone is calling me right now and it's about blah, blah, blah. Who does this serve? Well, this serves the end user that has to serve their customer because there's a deadline. So now you know that's high priority. Who does this serve over here? Well, this serves the company, but it isn't a priority and would be nice to have. So it's back to that quadrant, have to have, nice to have, must haves. You know, that whole quadrant thing actually works to some degree. The problem is it's really complex. So you have to have a simple lens in order to view things and understand this is where I add value and where the company does and where I don't. And as a leader, you've got to articulate that in such a way, who we serve as a brand, who we serve, why they need to be served or still need to be served, and then, you know, why us? Then finally, how do we do it, right? And you let your people help you figure out how. Problem is most of us as owners, we start with how. There's this problem. Here's a problem. How am I going to fix it? Here's another problem. How am I going to fix it? Not, here's a problem. Why does it need to be fixed? See how you modify that lens? Why does this need to be fixed? Does it need to be fixed right now? And why am I the guy to do it? Oh, I'm not. I've got a great team member that can do that. Their strength is that, not mine. So flattening organizations to some degree to where it's now according to strengths and be able to say that person's great at this. Let's let them take the lead on this one. Not a title, right? Not a title that dictates everything. We've gotten so big on titles that dictate everything. It drives me insane. The fact that I have to have on my business card drives me nuts.
None.
You know?
Do you have one of those funny ones on there? Like,
well, I did. I used to have like growthologist, yeah, or, you know, Samoria. And someone asked me, what does Samoria mean? I said, Samoria damn business, yeah, that kind of thing. So they're like,
yes.
So yes, I went through all it because I'm that weird creative guy. So yes, I've done all of them. But at the end of the day, they see you through the lens of their need. I mean, so think about that for a minute. Your kids need to see you as mom right now. That's the lens of their need. Your husband, depending on the moment, either sees you as a caregiver for the children, a caregiver for him, or a partner through the lens of the need. So everyone always sees you through the lens of their need. My sister still sees me as the 60-year-old punk that drove her nuts. But she has a sign, but she has a flower shop. So whenever it's a sign question, all of a sudden I'm the sign guy, right? So you know, you always see everyone through the lens of your need. And that is the issue, is that you if you have a lens of need and you're being seen that way, but that really doesn't reflect who you are, you've got to have the wherewithal and the understanding of your group and your team to be able to get to the right person that does meet that need, that can, that's designed, that's focused on meeting that need. And so titles suck, but people have to have that because they have to wrap their head around, what are you to me? They just do. But it does put people in boxes. But having an organization where you can say, this is where we're going, guys, right? This is where we are today. Here's where we want to be tomorrow. Here's who we serve. And you have that kind of detailed out, but it doesn't have to be some crazy document. I've helped companies put this together, and I mean, it's literally 3 pages long, and they run their whole company off of it. So it's like, this is what it is, but then they can share it such a way with the actual employees and team to where the team goes, hey, I'm good at that. And so now you start to document who's good at what. Now the role of the leader goes from having to handle it all, figure it all out, or, well, I've got good people for this, but I don't have good people for that. Well, now you understand all of your people have some talents that you can utilize. to becoming a leadership or a servitude-focused leader that allows you to then go, what do you need to maximize your ability to meet this need of our customer? What do you need as far as technology to make sure you're all on the same page so you can be cohesive? What do you need? Now the owner can be more of a servant that's serving their people because he knows his people serve properly and trained upright and the right tools. And you talked about AI earlier. I've done such a deep dive on that. And I'll tell you, I'm using it like crazy right now. And as a creative, I dug my heels in and went, nope, takes away, no. But it's no different than the sign industry going with the hand painters. Oh, vinyl cutters, we're screwed. We're out. And the ones that never embraced it, we're out. The ones that embraced it took off. And then digital printing came along. Heck, they even call like cut vinyl now or partial wraps spot graphics, which is hysterical to me. Such marketing, right? I'm like, spot graphics? It's cut vinyl. What are you talking about? But because it doesn't cover the whole thing, it's spot graphics. But, you know, everything goes through a cycle. Everything has a shelf life. We have a shelf life. The minute we're born, right? We have a shelf life. And I think that's the thing we don't understand is we're here for just a time. What impact are we going to have? And what experiences are we going to create and have that make it worth it? They're not always going to be great experiences. They can be very difficult experiences. Are they worth it? Because anybody that's ever started a company will say, it was worth it. You know, if they started the right company for the right reasons, they will always say that. I think that it's all about just being very intentional. We've become so reactive in our world. We react to everything. There's a post.
Maybe mad. I'm going to get out of here.
It's like, really? You're going to take 35 minutes that you could have been getting a hug from your husband or your wife and or hanging out with your son playing a video game to respond to some idiot that literally took an opinion of an opinion of an opinion and gave another opinion on it.
Who lives across the country. You'll never see
it's not
in
even
your
there.
Life.
It's not there. What are you doing? So yeah, but that's what we do. We're reactive. Business owners, it blows my mind. When I ask those three questions, who do you serve? Why do they still need to be served? Why do they need to be served? And then why you? They struggle. It blows my mind. They can't answer it. And it takes me pushing back harder to help them because they can't answer those questions. And that is, I think, where it begins. Until you can answer those questions and then trust your team to figure out the how with you, right? Because everything's, the how is always going to evolve. It just is, according to partnerships, things like that. And who you serve might evolve because all of a sudden now you have new capabilities that you'd have before in the YU. So now you can match it up to more people you can serve, right? So those things evolve, and just having that lens to be able to look through it and guide your decisions, some stringent, lineal, you know, business plan that's 22 pages long that you get financing with and you put it on the shelf. It's like you got to have something you can move really fast. And so most owners don't want to take time to just create that lens. But once they do, you can maintain it easily and you make great decisions quickly, and it helps you to trust your employees. Now your employees aren't as burnout because now
exactly. You
trust. Right? They're
right.
Able, they're empowered to lean towards their strengths,
exactly,
not their weakness.
Well, and I think when you get to use your strengths, it doesn't matter if it's in the workplace, if you're volunteering, if it's at home in a role that you serve in your family, when you're doing something, like, it's always great to do things that you're good at, right? Everybody loves to do things that they're good at. Like, I don't like to try new things because I have a really good friend who loves rock climbing, and I have the upper body strength of a ballerina, which means that I have nothing at all, mostly, right? And she's like, you want to go rock climbing? And I'm like, actually, I really don't. And the reason I don't want to go is 95% because I know that I would be terrible at it, right? So people, now, that's probably an entire other conversation of, like, it's good to also challenge ourselves. But the point being, people love to do the things that they're good at. And so if your team gets to use their gifts, then their work becomes life-giving and not life-sucking, you know?
So this takes me a little side note. I'll bring it back around, I promise.
Okay.
This is my AD. You've seen my ADD in action this whole time. So just bear with me.
Yeah.
I will promise you I'll bring it back around eventually.
Okay.
So my son says, Dad, do dogs go to heaven? Because our dog's aging, right? And it's really my daughter's dog. And we just have a feeling once she goes off to college, she's 13, 14 years old. Once she goes off to college, then the dog itself is going to just wither because it's like her buddy. They're like tight, right? And so we're talking about how we're designed. And I said, you know, human beings are the only ones. So my daughter, of course, chimes in being the brainiac and goes, yes, we're the only ones that have to learn all this stuff and be programmed like a computer. The minute a gazelle comes out, it knows it has to run. It's going to get eaten. So it's just, you know, I'm like, really? It's, you know, she's talking this high level. I'm like, really? Thanks a lot there, chick. So then I had to go in and explain that to him. So then we come back around and I go, but here's what you got to think about. You have to think about the fact that we are the only creatures on this planet that literally have the capacity to never stop learning and adapt to new things. And he just looked at me. I said, a fish knows it's a fish. A tiger knows it's a tiger. I said, here's back to what you're talking about. Your strengths are part of the core of who you are and how you were designed, right? That's part of who you are and how you were designed. Why would you want to be anything else? But yet society says, you have to be this, you have to be that. You know what I would tell your friend back? You know what? I'll learn how to rock climb if you want to do Tai Bo with me. Because I guarantee you my strength down here is going to whoop on you in a minute, you know? So but everyone's got their strengths, right? Everyone's got that thing they're really good at. And it's like, I agree with you. People come alive. You know, in the religious community, we call it the calling, right? You've stepped into your calling. When you step into your calling, all of a sudden, your soul's fed, your mind's fed, your body's fed, everything's fed because you're going, this feels right. This is where I'm supposed to be. And sometimes you have to be in that wilderness a while to gain all those skill sets. So when it's time to step into it, you're fully in and you have everything you need to magnify it to the massive level. But back to what you were talking about with the kids, they don't want to take time to learn the skill set. They want everything now. And it's like, once you understand the journey, if I could go back and tell my 20-something something, you got me on a soapbox. Sorry, I'm wound up. So if I could go back and tell my 20-something something, I'd say, listen, pal, stop striving for all this crap, okay? Go out and have as many positive experiences as you can have in this world. And when you pop your head up at 28, you'll finally figure out where you might want to go. And when you pop your head back up at 35, you'll know firmly who you are, what you're about, what you're capable of, and then you can build something that really matters. Stop making these starts and stops. Stop making these misdirections. Stop living for other people. Be intentional in who you are and how you were built. And I would totally just hammer myself with that because I was so off course for so many times, but I kept getting steered back. And that's when you know it's your calling too, because even when you make those missteps, something in the universe goes, you got to get back over there. It's that way. And sometimes it's hitting rock bottom. Sometimes it's a health issue. Sometimes it's a finance issue. Sometimes, you know, all kinds of, but that's the way to re-steer you back into what you're really supposed to be doing. And this sounds crazy. I know we're being positive here, but if you're in a company and you don't feel like you're being utilized and you don't feel like you are using your abilities, go to the higher ups, have that discussion. And if they're not open, find another job. Go find something else. Don't bring everyone down because you haven't stepped into what you were called to do. Because at the end of the day, that's the hardest thing in businesses is trying to motivate people that don't want to be motivated because they're not on the right seat, on the right bus at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, man.
Anyways.
No, that is so...
There's lots of good nuggets in here.
Wow. Yeah. Our content, our social media is going to be popping off the next couple of weeks.
We're going to be doom scrolling on that. Yeah.
I love it. Man, Scott, thank you so much for all of your insights.
You.
I know we're going to have you back on.
Well, I'd love to.
At some point. Anytime. And this was just such a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. You guys are amazing. You ladies are, I can see why they brag about you. You guys are awesome. You're very, seriously, one of the best interviews I've ever had. One of the most fun.
Oh.
You guys were fantastic. I mean, very well prepared. Great topic. Want to go deep. It's the right name for your podcast. That's all I can say.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
That is so kind. We really appreciate that, Scott. All right, Ree, another great episode. Thanks, Scott, again so much for being on with us. Just blown away by the amount of information and just wisdom that he had to share with us. Ree, from this part of our conversation, what would you say is your key takeaway?
Again, it's hard to choose. Once again, as I sat and thought about it, I think one thing, just to simplify it, is in order to rest – and really take that time, we really have to be intentional. We cannot just go about the daily grind and our normal routine. We need to be intentional about what specific things create rest in our lives. And it is different for everyone. I think one thing that was really great that he mentioned is we're always trying to find that work-life balance. And what is balance? What is balance? It's never going to be the same. It's always going to be there's a certain part of your life or a certain person in your life that needs more versus work that's that tug and pull constantly. And so instead of balance, he talked about harmony. And I think that was really powerful. And a really great way to think about that is try to have a harmony in your soul and in the different activities in your day and the different people that you impact versus that balance. Because if you're always striving for balance, you're never going to get it.
It's so true. It's a great way to kind of reframe that conversation. And I think it goes hand in hand with what I would say is my kind of key takeaway from this episode, which is that finding your calling is so, so important. I remember a number of years ago, my grandmother, she's not as mobile as she used to be, so she had to have a chairlift installed in her home. And the guy that came to install it, he was so good with her and did his work well and quickly and then helped show her how to do it. And he made a huge difference in an experience for my grandmother that was, I wouldn't call it traumatizing, but it was very difficult for her. It's recognizing that she doesn't have the same ability that she used to. And he just was so gracious in that interaction. And we all walked away from that and said, wow, like that man has found his calling. He installs chairlifts. Okay. But he found his calling. And I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm a believer that your work has to be your calling or has to be the only facet of your calling, but that if you can find that and you, like Scott was saying, every couple of years, like stick your head above the water and say like, what direction am I heading or where am I supposed to be going that I might not actually be on the path right now? I think is such a valuable way of understanding how do we serve people as leaders? How do we serve people well as just fellow teammates? How do we serve people well? Right. And all those things, when you're thinking about it in a larger perspective, really do help shape and make easier some of those other things that can kind of weigh us down, the detail work. So just so many great things from this episode. Thanks again to Scott. Just fantastic.
Absolutely. And when you're truly doing on a daily, and again, it doesn't necessarily have to be work, but what your innate gifts are and what the core of your true gifts as a person are has the biggest impact on those around you. All right, Scott, that's a wrap. And I know this is the end, but also just the beginning, because I'm sure that we will have you on another episode. And I just want to thank you again for everything, for all your insights. There are so many takeaways to this episode that I am going to continue to ponder. And just remember to invest in yourself for the sake of your family, your workplace, and most importantly, you.
Absolutely. Let us know in the comments, how are you resting, or what do you find to be the most effective ways of resting and finding that restoration, like Renan said, for your family, for your workplace, for your community. As always, don't forget to like and share this episode, give us a follow, and until next time, keep innovating.